Hi, podcast listeners. We'd like to tell you about an important PLI one-hour briefing. In the last 2 years, the Supreme Court has dramatically moved constitutional law in a conservative direction. Once again, the Supreme Court's docket for the October 2023 term is filled with cases of great legal and social importance that will profoundly affect the lives of many. On April 29, join Dean Erwin Chemerinsky for PLI's one-hour briefing titled Supreme Court, October Term 2023, Another Year of Major Decisions. Dean Chemerinsky will provide a review of the major cases this term, including those concerning gun rights, the power of federal administrative agencies, social media content and speech on the internet, and more. Register now at pli.edu/sc23. That's pli.edu/sc23. This program is brought to you by the Practicing Law Institute, a nonprofit learning organization dedicated to keeping attorneys, professionals, and accountants at the forefront of knowledge and expertise.
Hello and welcome to the Insecurities Podcast, keeping it fresh and staying wonky on securities regulatory and enforcement developments you should be following. I'm Kurt Wolf, and unfortunately, my co-host Chris Ekimoff cannot be with us today, so I'm flying solo on this episode of Insecurities. Watch out, everybody. We're going to miss Chris, but for our regular listeners who are on Team Chris, I'm told that's a thing. Not to worry. He'll be back with us in a couple weeks for episode 40. Yes, believe it or not, episode 40, when we'll sit down with SEC Commissioner Caroline Crenshaw to talk about some investment advisor and broker-dealer regulatory hot topics. In the meantime, we've got a great show lined up today. We're actually going to talk with another expert in the IABD space, Cliff Kirsch, about some of the exciting programs that PLI has lined up in 2021. Let's get to it. Before we dive in, a little background on Cliff. Cliff has more than 25 years' experience as a practitioner in the securities regulatory space. Cliff began his career at the SEC, where he received the Cohen Award, which recognizes young lawyers who display outstanding legal ability, integrity, and judgment. He also served as assistant director of the SEC's Division of Investment Management. Cliff later became chief legal officer for one of the country's largest duly registered broker-dealer advisors and subsequently joined Sutherland, now Evershed Sutherland, in 2006. As we'll learn, Cliff is a frequent speaker at PLI and other industry conferences and is the author and editor of two of the leading treatises in the broker-dealer and advisor arena. Cliff is also the co-founder of the Julia Ann Kirsch Foundation, which seeks to serve the needs of disabled individuals and their families. Cliff, you are a busy guy, and we're excited to have you on the show. Thanks so much for joining Insecurities.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for that introduction, mentioning my time at the SEC, my time now with Evershed Sutherland. Also, thanks for mentioning the Julia Kirsch Foundation. We appreciate that. And I should also say, I've been liking the podcast a lot. You and Chris do a really nice job. I love the interaction. I do like that interaction. I love the the accounting securities interplay, and you really do a nice job of keeping it informal and bringing out a lot of nice conversation. So I'm sincere. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks, Cliff. Appreciate the feedback. We're definitely going to miss Chris, but we're going to do the best. I get the sense that that you and I are going to have a good banter and a good chat today. So
We could team up against him.
I love it. Feel free to drop in Reg BI references anytime. You know, he loves that kind of thing. So. As I mentioned, you've done an awful lot of work with PLI in addition to all the things you've done, you know, as a practitioner in private practice and when you were in-house. Among the things that you've done, you've written or edited two PLI treatises. You are the editor of PLI's BDIA blog, Regulation in Focus. You chair several programs every year, including an upcoming program called Securities Law and Practice 2021, How the SEC Works. We want to focus on that a little bit today. So we're going to talk about all those topics. We're also going to get some of your thoughts about the broader BD and IA regulatory landscape at the end. I mean, no pressure, just because Commissioner Crenshaw is going to be coming on in a couple of weeks.
Yeah,
but first,
I'd like to follow her instead of
It's easier that way, right?
Yeah.
But first, let me just ask you, because I can sympathize with the amount of time that you spend. It's a labor of love, I'm sure, doing programs with PLI. How does that work sort of intersect with or maybe bolster your practice?
It's funny. My time with PLI started as someone who was at the SEC at the time, 1 year into the SEC, and I went to, it could have been their SEC annual conference. I forget what it was, but it really, you know, meant a lot to me at that time because it started connecting things for me 1 year. And you know, PLI's mission has sort of been the same so much. I mean, so much has changed. But it's really training, practical perspective, staying current. My work, my association with PLI started with the investment advisor treatise. You know, at the time, Larry Soderquist's treatise was out, and working with PLI and Larry, you know, we came up with the idea of the investment advisor treatise, and that was about 30 years ago. And from there, a number of conferences grew, and you know, Kurt, as you mentioned, it's. You know, it's work. It's a lot of work there. You know, it does sort of leverage the practice. It helps the practice, but at the same time, you know, you do it because you want to stay current and you want to connect with people and you want to connect with panelists and working with the PLI team. You want to connect with the PLI team. That's just like a tremendous support in pulling these programs together. So it is a lot of work, but the reason, you know, we do it and the reason your guests that you have, you like talking about the issues. You like covering it. You like connecting with folks. So, you know, in a way it's work, in a way it's sort of what we do.
I feel the exact same way about it. And for what it's worth, I can say I appreciate the quality product that you put out, you know, time and again. I've attended your conferences over the years. You know, I've picked in particular the investment advisor treatise off the shelf many times to sort of pull something out that I needed in representing a client or trying to answer a question for a client. So, you know, I appreciate the hard work that you put into it. And I know those resources are useful and will be useful for anyone who's tuning in. You know, since you said you kind of started by working on the treatises, let's start there because you have written or edited two. One is broker-dealer regulation. That's a four thick volume treatise that was updated last November. And it covers things like registration, reporting and record keeping, suitability and best ex, minimizing liability in the event of legal lapses, and compliance programs. The other treatise is investment advisor regulation, a step-by-step guide to compliance and the law. That's three volumes, and it covers form ADV, advisory contracts, soft dollar arrangements, best execution requirements for investment advisors, record keeping, of course. So that's a lot of work. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about those volumes, where our listeners can find them, and how you kind of keep current, keep updating them to make sure that folks are getting what they need.
Yeah, with a lot of them. And, you know, so we're here today to talk mostly about broker-dealer and investment advisor. And also in terms of the treatise collection, we also have a treatise on financial product fundamentals. We also have a mutual funds treatise and one on variable products.
Wow.
And a soon-to-be-released one on fintech. So,
oh,
so it's a lot. And, you know, with these, I started out, you know, I mentioned like over 30 years ago on the investment advisor treatise. And when I started, it wasn't even quite sure whether it was going to be a one-time offering or whether there would be any updates. And it sort of grew to two updates a year. And I started out writing the treatise. And then over time, I just grew to, you know, to be editor. So there's a number of chapters that I write, a number of chapters that are contributors.
Right.
And, you know, it all goes back to, Kurt, what we were talking about. Like the reason we do this is to connect. We connect with people who attend the program. We connect with you connect with your guests. We connect with the contributors. So a lot of the updates is, you know, if you're doing this stuff, you have to stay up to date. So It's, you know, staying abreast of, you know, action letters, you know, enforcement cases, and just trying to weave it in, new rules. But it's also, you know, in addition to sort of the basic of the frameworks of the advisor framework and the broker-dealer framework, we also try to have special topics. So, you know, in addition to segmented topics that are the framework of the Advisors Act in terms of the advisor treatise and segment, you know, the framework of the broker dealer. We have, for example, in the broker dealer treatise, a standalone chapter on arbitration. We have a standalone chapter on fintech related developments. So that's how we try to expand it, grow it, keep it current. And again, I won't keep on saying it throughout this, but just again, the PLI team is just great. So they do a lot of the lifting in terms of the editorial staff on the book side, on the treatise side, mm-hmm. and the program staff on the conference side. Yeah. You know, and the other thing that's just a great reference, so it's the hard copy. People certainly, you know, enjoy in having the hard copy, but a lot of people access the online library. That's just all the treatises, just beyond the broker-dealer advisor. All the treatises that PLI puts out is just available online. And I just know just a lot of attorneys sort of just prefer that. Yeah, they do a search and all the treatises that may be a hit come up. That's another valuable resource.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that. I had forgotten about this, but very early in the days of COVID, when people were first switching over to work from home, I remember talking to a partner in the firm's New York office who was frustrated because she couldn't get her hands on the treatise that you wrote. And that is when I first realized that it was available online on PLI.edu. And we were able, you know, because the firm had a membership, of course, we were able to go on there and pull down the information that we needed. Again, it's actual useful stuff that as a practitioner I use multiple times a year, but I had forgotten that it was available online. So that's a perfect plug.
And I do think, you know, the fact of working remotely sort of drives that home. And I think a lot of people sort of, and I know just personally, I enjoyed that online access also.
Yeah.
Same thing. We're a member of PLI and I enjoyed that access that we have.
Yeah, I've got to ask you, going a little bit off script here, Cliff, it's been a crazy year for broker-dealers, especially as we've seen some of the new online trading platforms or applications have just explosive growth and experienced some perhaps unexpected regulatory hurdles. Are you going to be updating either or both of the treatises sort of in response to meme stock trading and some of the things we've seen in recent months?
Well, not specifically that, but more broadly, so, you know, when we talk about COVID, it's sort of amazing, like what we're not talking about today in terms of the regulatory framework. We're not talking about BCP, you know, business continuity. Mm-hmm. There's a sense, wow, the financial industry, it really worked.
Yeah.
You know, and now sort of the thinking, you know, FINRA has, you know, potential rulemaking about what rules of it may change to better allow for a remote environment, to allow financial professionals more access to work remotely, to better allow firms to do audits remotely, the internal mm-hmm. audits that they are required to do, to allow them to do that remotely. So, you know, FINRA has an active rulemaking on that. And we have a supervisory structure chapter and a number of chapters I touched that. Yeah, so we'll stay we'll stay current on that. And then if there's, regulatory developments that, happen on, in terms of specific rules relating to sort of current development in terms of trading and trading apps, yeah, we'll cover that.
Fantastic. I mean, part of this is just about being flexible and adapting to changing circumstances. And I think, one of the ways you've done that in your role at PLI is developing a blog dedicated to broker-dealer and investment advisor issues. Tell us a little bit about the blog. I mean, first, where can people find it? But also, what kinds of topics are you covering? And I think you've got one or two recent posts in particular that you are going to tell us about.
Thanks for mentioning the blog. You know, it really stands for the fact that there's an awful lot of different ways to sort of communicate information and developments and allow people to yeah. digest it. You know, we have the books, we have the conferences, we have your podcast, and the blog is just a, it's another way. And it really grew out of, discussions. I'm sure, Kurt, you and Chris just have, regular conversations with PLI, like how could yeah. we sort of better do what we're doing? What else could we be doing? But it just grew that there could be a need for just more developments that are not as structured as a book or not as formal as a panel presentation, right. but just to allow. And so, when there's noteworthy items, it could be the legal alert that we post or some other sort of content. And it's a PLI BDIA regulation in focus. So I think if people plug in that or they could get there through the PLI website, mm-hmm. They could access it. Yeah, and we just try to stay up to date in terms of regulatory developments in the broker-dealer and investment advisor space. And the key thing, again, I mentioned, obviously the conferences are a lot of people. A lot of people have a hand in it because we have great guest speakers who come on board. And now it's the same with the book. We have a lot of great contributors. And the blog also, we're always looking for people to contribute, to sort of, you know, share their voice, share the regular development. It could be a legal alert that they've written or some other content. Just today, we posted a legal alert on FINRA's regulatory notice seeking ways in which it can advance diversity and inclusion in the financial services industry. And it'll be interesting to see the type of comments that FINRA gets on that. It's still open. But, you know, I anticipate, and FINRA asks for like wide ranging comments. It doesn't have to be rule by rule by rule. Right. Let us know whether this inhibits diversity and inclusion. I think it's broad. Like, how can we better advance diversity and inclusion? And again, I think that could set the stage for developments at FINRA over the year. That was one post just a couple of weeks ago, a post by Ronak Patel, who wrote on a Texas enforcement action against an SEC registered advisor. But the reason that was interesting is because it's commonly understood that SEC registered advisors are regulated more limited by the states, you know, to the extent that they engage in fraudulent conduct. Certainly the states have, you know, enforcement authority.
Right.
And this post sort of, you know, mentioned that it was curious in that there wasn't an express finding of fraud against the advisor. So it sort of just sort of highlighted this and sort of said, is this, you know, directionally shift? Is this something that's noteworthy? So we'll see more of that, but it just shows you, like, it's all different type of topics we try to just sort of bring out there through the blog.
Yeah, well, I love both of those. You know, the second one is certainly interesting to me as more of an enforcement guy. I actually haven't read that one yet, but it's fascinating. And particularly the timing. I think many people expected to see more of that during the last administration when there were some questions about how aggressive SEC enforcement was going to be and, you know, whether state securities regulators would need to pick up the slack. Turns out there wasn't that much slack. But the timing of this Texas action is certainly interesting. And then, of course, diversity and inclusion is something that Chris and I care a lot about, as does PLI. And we had a really good episode a few weeks ago on that, where we talked about how we can do better in the accounting and legal professions. So maybe they'll want to lob in a comment to FINRA with some ideas.
I agree. That was an excellent episode. And I enjoyed that. And
thank you.
It sort of caused me to think like the press in terms of what could everyone do, how everyone could play a role in it. But you all did a nice job in speaking about that topic.
Yeah, thanks for it.
You know, in terms of the state federal dynamic, it'll be very interesting to see what happens over the next year in terms of against or led SEC and the states. Like how collaborative will that be?
Yeah.
You know, what may grow out of that? So a lot more to come. So that Texas action, although it's just isolated, a lot more to come in terms of the whole role of the SEC and the states.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, it's going to be interesting because we've seen some of that over the last year or so. And, you know, I won't mention any particular trading applications in particular, but, you know, we have seen Massachusetts act in a space where the SEC hasn't really yet. So, I agree with you. There may be a developing tension or maybe they just need to kind of iron out, you know, who's gonna claim what turf. But definitely interesting times.
And it could be collaborative at the same time.
It could.
Maybe we'll see, I know you were joking before in terms of regulation best interest, maybe we'll see like a joint roundtable, the SEC, FINRA, and the states or something like that. We haven't seen that to date, but it'll be interesting to see what grows out of just how the regulators themselves look to communicate.
A
joint position or not. We'll see.
I think that's a great idea. I think they should. I think a lot of people in the industry would love that because at least you know the rules then. I mean, people may not necessarily like the rules, but if you know what they are, you can figure out how to play by them or not, right? All right, well, let's pivot and talk a little bit about some of the programs that you chair. I've got sort of a list of them here of what I see coming up on the calendar for you. Of course, as I mentioned, we want to talk a little bit more in depth about securities law and practice in 2021, how the SEC works. So I'm going to skip that for now, but we have in just a couple of weeks, Fundamentals of Investment Advisor Regulation 2021. In July, we have Fundamentals of Broker-Dealer Regulation 2021. I believe that's an annual. I know I've done that one a couple of times, and it's always a really good program with strong panelists. And then looking a little bit farther out into the calendar, you are going to have ESG Considerations for Asset Managers, the Emerging Regulatory Framework Applying to Investment Funds and Investment Advisors. I think that's set for September. And then November, just in time for Turkey Day, we've got Financial Services RegTech and Regulatory Compliance Forum 2021. I don't know if you want to tell us a little bit more about any of those in particular, or if you just want to plug the ones that are coming up, but it's a lot. So what are you looking forward to there? What would you encourage folks to tune into?
Yeah, you know, maybe just a couple of thoughts in order. The PLI Advisor Conference, as you mentioned, is coming up, and we do have a very, very strong faculty. And you know, part of the exercise you mentioned, sort of what goes into it. You know, we're working with PLI, we sort of get a top faculty, and now we're sort of doing those, you know, the panel prep calls, like really just trying to sort out the approach. But just given where we are in terms of like new roommate, we have a fresh panel that we haven't offered before, just on the SEC marketing rule, because the SEC just adopted a new advertising rule, the new marketing rule that's very significant, and we're going to sort of spend an hour, you know, 75 minutes just on that, talking about compliance issues with that. We have a standalone panel on state regulation, private funds. We're talking about current trends, you know, ESG. So a lot there. And we have an overview panel. With all of these, we try to sort of get it. If you're advanced, that you know, we could speak to you. But also, we try to have a couple of introductory panels for those who are newer to the practice. Same thing with the broker-dealer. In July, we have a couple of introductory panels. Who is a BD? What is a BD? What's the definition? How do the regulators work with one another? Then we have a state regulation panel, a panel on FINRA. What does FINRA do? The overview. And then we have a FinTech panel. And then, the ESG panel for asset managers is brand new. So we're shaping it now. You know, we hope to start off with like lay of the land terminology, but really asset manager focused. Really the range of those like impact funds versus those that are just, you know, integrating ESG philosophies into their practice. And so what is the exam focus like? You know, making sure that disclosures line up with practice. And that one's being shaped now, that program.
That sounds fascinating. It's certainly a timely topic. I mean, we've talked about ESG in particular on a number of episodes, and we had a really great conversation with Commissioner Hester Peirce about ESG, maybe a month and a half or so ago now. So it's great to see that you are, you know, building out new programs to sort of respond to what's going on in the regulatory environment. I think that's great for the folks that tune in to PLI. And, you know, another thing that I think you tend to do, which I like, is get folks from the regulators to come talk about, you know, either what their priorities are or how they're thinking about particular issues. Do you have any good headliners coming up in these programs?
We do. We have a wide assortment of SEC SEC staffers on the investment advisor panel. Program on, you know, same with the broker-dealer panel. I know we're going to be talking about the SEC, you know, inside the SEC, and obviously that has SEC folks at all. So, all of these programs, we try to bring on board the SEC staff, and it's great because they give like an invaluable perspective. They really take you inside and sort of talk about it. And one of the good things about these, like it's, you know, a lot of times we have SEC folks tuning into the panel to listen to FINRA, the state. It's really nice. It's really just a time to like pause and say, let's understand the framework. Let's get some common questions out. So that, you know, that's one thing we try to do with these programs as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you always do a terrific job, and somehow the folks who are coming to speak from the regulators, they're always very candid on these panels, which I like. You know, sometimes you go to conferences and they feel a little bit cagey. And I don't know if that's because they're sitting in a huge room of people and they feel less comfortable. But I've noticed particularly over the last year in these remote conferences, I just feel like it's a very open conversation. It just kind of feels like, you know, the Zoom I would be having with my team on a Tuesday, which is, you know, it's really good. I think it's one of the secret silver linings that's come out of COVID. So, you know, congrats and thanks to you and the folks who moderate your panels for doing that so well.
Yeah, no, thanks for mentioning that. You know, we appreciate that.
So that's sort of a perfect segue, I think, to talk about another one of the programs. It's what we kind of want to focus on today, which is PLI's Securities Law and Practice 2021, How the SEC Works program. And as you just put it, that's sort of a peek inside the SEC, or I think that's the intention. This is a new program, I think. Is that right?
This version is new. We've been doing the program for a number of years. And it's usually a longer program, typically goes a half day. This one we put together with a view to offering it in June. So it's a little off cycle in two sessions, two panels. And the thing that we're trying to leverage is the timing. You know, the fact that so much is happening at the SEC with the new transition. So we really wanted to try to capture the transition. So that's why we put it together off cycle as a two panel program in June.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the panels. I mean, I think that's a perfect elevator pitch, and I mean, I know I'm going to tune in, but you already knew that. So the two panels are first one I think is called Inside the SEC, How the SEC Works. The panelist from the commission is Richard Best, who is the regional director of the SEC in New York. And then you also have Annette Nazareth of Davis Polk, who I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast knows. But tell us a little bit more about that panel. What are they going to talk about?
Yeah, well, you know, the program, you know, itself is, you know, it really grew out of, you know, again, conversations with PLI, but really, like a need, if you're going to practice in this area, you have to, of course, understand the federal securities laws. But how does the SEC do what it needs to do? How does it get done? Yeah. What do the different divisions do? What does the regional office do? How does the SEC fit into the overall regulatory scheme of regulated entities or securities regulation? Like really just focusing less on the federal securities laws and more on, you know, functional activity of the SEC. And the first panel is a look at the SEC, a look inside the SEC. How is the SEC organized? How do the offices relate to one another? How does the SEC speak? What's the difference between the SEC and the staff? What's the difference between rulemaking and a no action letter versus an informal guidance? You know, it's really geared for, you know, those who are, you know, somewhat familiar or maybe newer to SEC practice and getting them more comfortable with any of those, you know, panelists. The, you know, the first panel is Annette Nazareth, then Richard Best and Julie Riwe from Debevoise, who used to be co-chief of the Asset Management Division Enforcement. Any of them, you could, it's easy to moderate. You could just say, could you let us know in an hour, 15, you know, just say what you need to, because you just want to hear them. But yeah, right, it'll be a discussion. So it's really going to, you know, look at the different offices, what the different offices do, how they relate to one another and things like that. And we hope to leave the 75 minutes with people having a very good understanding of the structure and the operation of the SEC.
I think it sounds like a very valuable panel discussion. I remember years ago when I was, you know, a younger practitioner and still learning the space a little bit, attending a panel with several of the regional directors. And I was fascinated to hear how they communicate with one another, you know, how priorities trickle down to the regional offices from headquarters, and even how, you know, the members of the enforcement staff in the different divisions deal with matters where there may be overlapping geography or topics that may be of interest to the staff in more than one office. So I learned a lot from that. It sounds like you're going to kind of get at some of those issues here as well.
That's exactly right. That's, yeah, because there's a lot that goes into just the running of the SEC before you see a rule, before you see, a position. Yeah, how does it do what it does? So that's right.
It's always good to know how the sausage is made, whether you're an enforcement person or a regulatory advisory practitioner. I do think it helps you in your practice give better advice to your clients. But so does sort of looking around the corner, right? And so I think that's maybe what we're thinking about with the second panel of the day, which is called the SEC in 2021. Tell us a little bit about that panel.
Yeah, so that one is just like you say, Kurt, a look at what the regulatory agenda is likely going to be at the SEC, and that's going to be more topical. It's going to look at what the regulatory priorities are going to be. So on that one, we have a number of the major senior legal counsel from the major industry groups. So we have Susan Olson from the Investment Company Institute, general counsel, Laura Grossman from the Investment Advisor Association, Ira Hammerman, the general counsel of SIFMA, Scott Borges from the University of Texas at Austin, but who was previously at the SEC.
Right.
And just really talking about the priorities. And it's sort of an interesting time now. It's really a good time to have it because a number of the industry trade groups are sending in, industry letters to Gensler, laying out, their hopes for the SEC what they'd like to see as regulatory priorities. And for those who are newer to sort of practice, those are interesting to get a hand on and read as well. Because it really gives a suggestion or some hints about what things the SEC may be thinking about. Those letters, again, just the industry's wish list, what the industry is hoping the SEC focuses on or maybe not focus on.
I'll be interested to see if they have comments about the role of the SEC's director of enforcement. The industry had an awful lot to say a few weeks ago when we had and lost a new director over the course of about a week or so. But that's me. Again, I have an enforcement bias. Are there things that you're going to be watching for during the conference that you're hoping to learn or take away?
It'll be interesting to see what the representatives say, in terms of meetings they've had with the staff, their general sense, general tenor, the feedback they got, what sort of follow-up. And by the time of the conference, it'll be interesting to see where we are in the transition. It'll be very interesting to see what positions have been filled. When the enforcement position was filled several weeks ago, and I realize I had special circumstance at the time, but I have thought that, we may see, the division heads being filled very quickly.
Rolling out.
It's not quite clear where we are with that right now.
You've got a couple of weeks, so you never know that some of that might start to take shape before your panelists hit the virtual stage. You do have, as you mentioned, this ESG conference coming in the fall. Are you going to be keeping your eye on any conversations around things like climate risk disclosure or a possible ESG disclosure rulemaking?
Certainly, by the time of the conference, we'll see where the SEC is with respect to the request for comments that went out under Acting Chair Lee. The comment period runs up in a couple of weeks. We have probably until mid-June or so. And it'll be very interesting to see. There seems to be some momentum for the SEC to encourage the TCFD task force guidelines on climate risk disclosure. We'll see what comes of that. If there's any endorsement or encouragement or anything like that. We'll see what the SEC has to say. But just from everything you hear in terms of Chairman Gensler's testimony, confirmation hearing, it really seems like he'll just pick up where Acting Chair Lee, set in process, with ESG.
I think that's right. We've seen Chair Gensler a couple of times now, before the House Financial Services Committee and Senate Banking on a couple of different hearings. And I mean, I think it's been interesting some of the things that they've focused on during the course of those hearings. If I think all the way back to his confirmation hearing, I think we talked a lot more about materiality, for example, than what many people might have expected. I'm sure that you've watched and read about his performances at these hearings. I mean, do you have any hot takes on what we should expect from Chair Gensler?
One thing, and again, it's hard not to get back to regulation best interest, as you mentioned in the introductory. But in terms of what he, certainly ESG is a major area, and obviously digital assets, another, major focus. But in terms of regulation best interest, it'll be interesting to see what exactly plays out. And, what we heard is, Chair Gensler saying, "You know, I'll be an enforcer. We'll make regulation best interest live up to its name, but we're not necessarily going to shred it or get rid of it. We're not looking to do that initially. And what will go into the process of getting an understanding of how regulation best interest is living up to its name? What does it mean? And there was another program you had recently that talked about principle based regulation that touched on that." And the point was made, when you have principle-based regulation and then you have sort of people sort of looking to apply the principles, it's a logical next step. We'll see what comes of it. The Division of Exams and their phase two exams of regulation best interest, we'll see if a report comes out of that, if exam deficiencies come out of that. There's just a whole lot of questions, in terms of where we are with regulation best interest and what Chair Gensler may look to do with it. And then we get to the whole issue of SEC versus state, that dialogue that we talked about.
Yeah, I like that. I'm certainly going to be following that. It'll be interesting to see if your panelists kind of pick up on that and talk about it at all at the conference in a couple of weeks here. As you know, Cliff, we like to do something a little fun with our guests before we wrap up the show. This is sometimes known as the lightning round, although it's not always that fast, as you know. But we've got a couple questions for you, and we're going to continue to kind of focus on some of the good work that you've done with PLI. You know, we've been talking a little bit about how we've all had to transition to a work from home environment. We've now been doing it, for more than a year, believe it or not.
I got to slow it down to think, but yeah, there is one. First of all, no horror story, but one where the person had to get up and say, "Excuse me," and ask someone who was vacuuming to go to another level of the So that definitely does stand out. I won't say who the person was or what, but
that's funny.
He's not proud of having to do that, but yeah, that was one. But I got to tell you, I was really worried at first with how well virtual will people drop off, like speakers drop off not knowing. And and again, they went well. They went well. You certainly miss the audience interaction, but again, the virtual really did go off well.
Yeah, I agree. And like I said, I think I don't know if this is sort of a result of the kind of Zoom like format that the presenters see as panelists, but it just feels very candid. I think it's harder when you're all sitting at a table sort of side by side in a row. And I think when you're actually kind of looking at each other in a Zoom room, I don't know, it feels really good to me. So I don't know, you're going to have to figure out how to keep that going when we get back in person, which is sort of my second question, right? So you've told me a sort of funny story that happened in a virtual conference. Do you have any that have happened live that you recall where, just something kind of went sideways in the middle?
Yeah. We had a keynote speaker who just mixed up the date and just forgot about it, didn't come. And he ended up having to call in. But in that day, an agent was just so unique to have like a call. And now I think we would accept it more. Somebody would be zoomed in or something. There was just a voice and they were looking at me on the podium while this person was speaking. But that was that one, a mix up in dates. And again, separate from that story. But yeah, we used to, years ago, once in a while, there'd be a change in travel plans or somebody from DC couldn't get to New York because of a storm. And then, in the last 5 years, we've been able to sort of video cast them, but it doesn't work. Even that was more primitive to what we would do now today in terms, I think it would be more seamless being able to do sort of have people come by, by video and come in remotely.
Yeah. But, yeah. And we've sort of talked about it a little bit, just being excited to get to go back to some of these conferences in person. So, tell me either what have you sort of missed the most about that or what are you most looking forward to when we can finally all get together again?
Yeah, I've been doing it for a lot of years. I started when everybody used to come in all the programs used to be live. They were not on demand at all. People would come, in a suit, no casual, and they would stay the full time, never get called away with messages or anything because you didn't access phones. And then, so, now you know, I am looking forward to the in-person. I really do think a lot of people are, and it really is not necessarily the delivery, but it is the before and after, that yeah. ability to sort of connect with attendees, even joke with the panelists beforehand in the coffee room, yeah. and after, you know, get questions from the attendees, even outside the actual formal presentation. It's that, you know, it gets back to Kurt, how we started. It's all about connecting. Right. And it's just sort of that personal connection before or after the program.
All right. So the last one for you, this could be a softball or not. We'll see how it goes. Or maybe you just, if you want to get a little misty, that's fine too. But in all your years working with PLI, what has been your most rewarding experience? And before you answer, it's okay if you want to say coming on Insecurities, you know, we'll accept that as an answer. But no, seriously, what has been the most rewarding thing about your association with PLI?
It is an easy one because it really is working with the team there. You know, I've gotten to know them over 20 years. I just know a lot of them, a good relationship. It's really growing ideas and really, you know, their ability to execute, even like this podcast, like their ability to sort of execute a podcast, the blog they're able to do quickly. So it really is sort of the relationship with PLI and what they bring to the table.
Yeah, I agree. It's been great for Chris and me as well. They are talented in a number of disciplines, you know, whether it's podcast, audio production, or, you know, helping getting, you know, something out in print. They're great. So I'm glad to be on the team too. Cliff, thank you so much for taking some time to talk to us today. I would encourage all of our listeners to attend the upcoming Securities and Law Practice 2021 conference. Also, check out the BDIA blog. Again, that is at bdia.pli.edu. Cliff, thanks for being with us.
Great. Thanks for having me. Take care.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Insecurities Podcast. And a special thanks to our guest, Cliff Kirsch of Evershed Sutherland. I know I'll be tuning into several of the programs Cliff chairs, and we hope you will too. As always, we'd love to hear from our listeners about how we're doing. Please send us your thoughts, comments, and recommendations for future episodes using the hashtag InsecuritiesPod on Twitter or LinkedIn. You can find me on Twitter at @enforce_update. And even though he's not here, you can find Chris on Twitter at @EkimoffCPA. We look forward to seeing you again soon. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Insecurities, a podcast from PLI, the Practicing Law Institute. PLI is a nonprofit provider of authoritative professional services training and continuing education. In an increasingly complex business environment where intricate corporate structures reign, Insecurities can help you make sense of it all. A special thanks goes to the producer of Insecurities, Daniel Pinitz, as well as hosts Chris Ekimoff and Kurt Wolf. For more information about PLI's SEC Institute, or to view hundreds of hours of fresh and relevant on-demand programming covering changes within the security sector, visit pli.edu/membership and sign up for a privileged membership. These recorded materials are designed for educational purposes only. This podcast does not constitute legal, audit, tax, consulting, business, financial, investment, or other professional advice, and it does not create an attorney-client relationship. Please consult a qualified professional advisor before taking any action based on the information herein. Furthermore, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely those of the individual participants. These views are not the views of the hosts or their employers. Users of this podcast may save and use the podcast only for personal or other non-commercial educational purposes. No other use, including without limitation, reproduction, retransmission, or editing of this podcast may be made without the prior written permission from PLI.